What do you categorize yourself? Are you C level? Are you B level?
I would be like below an F. Yeah, so like not not graded.
We're not even in the...
We're Z level.
Yeah, there you go.
So...
This is Bourbon Pursuit, the official podcast of bourbon, bringing to you the best in news, reviews, and interviews with people making the bourbon whiskey industry happen, and I'm one of your hosts, Kenny Coleman. For the longest time, celebrities have been getting into the spirits industry. It first started off as being a spokesperson and putting a recognizable face to a brand. But now, many celebrities are coming out with their own bottles, and bourbon is no exception. And in this episode, we look at many other celebrity bourbon brands that have emerged over the past few years and analyze them. Does a celebrity care about the quality of the whiskey, or are they just in it for the added revenue stream? And really, are there any good ones? But we ultimately want to know if celebrities will help bourbon or potentially hurt bourbon. With that, enjoy this week's episode. And now here's Fred Minnick with Above the Char.
I'm Fred Minnick, and this is Above the Char. This is not an idea that anybody sent me. It's just something that I came up with in my little old noggin. That's right. I'm capable of coming up with my own ideas. It's true. But the question is to myself, hi self, yes, how are you? Oh, I'm pretty good. Thanks. Thanks for having me. Oh, that's so cool. So yeah, I was curious. Do you have a particular favorite fourth grain that is used in American whiskey? Why? That's a great question. Thank you for asking that. You're welcome. I look forward to your answer. So I actually do have a favorite fourth grain. Now, so for those kind of just getting into bourbon, this is a little recap for you of what bourbon is. Bourbon has to be predominantly corn. So the law states it has to be at least 51% corn, and it comes from a fermented mash. They do not dictate what other grains that can go in there other than the fact that they have to be cereal grains. So it can't be like, you know, sorghum, for example. So even though some people have gotten away with using sorghum, that's another story. The most common grains that are used after corn are wheat, which is what is used in Pappy Van Winkle, Weller, Maker's Mark, barley, which is used in everything. It basically enacts fermentation. The malting process of barley basically is very important to the fermentation aspect, but it's not typically what they call a flavor grain. So the flavor grain, it's more of a neutral grain for bourbon. Although a lot of people have been pushing the envelope on barley, and it's becoming more and more of an impact from a flavor perspective, i.e. Rabbit Hole, New Riff, Chattanooga, doing a lot of different things with malts. And then, of course, rye. Rye is the most common secondary flavor grain, and that can be, you know, really consistently spicy. Sometimes some of these new hybrids of new styles of rye coming out are a little bit more meatier, a little bit more herbally. But anyway, so the other grains that are used quite a bit now are like rice. Rice is being used in a lot of products. I think Beam was probably the first one to do that, but a lot of people have been playing around with rice. There's also triticale, which is a hybrid of wheat and rye. That is actually used quite a bit more than I think we know. I think that has been making its way into a lot of bourbons, but you don't really hear people talking about it too much because, well, triticale doesn't flow off the tongue, and everyone's like, what the hell's triticale? I don't know what that is. And oats. Oats are, you know, seeing a lot more action, probably best done by spirits of French Lick. And that is my favorite grain after wheat and rye. And reason being is oats actually go back to a lot of the early whiskey recipes. And oats can have like a really, really soft profile, while at the same time, you can get the essence of the grain. And I love the essence of the grain. I love tasting grain that's been perfectly fermented and distilled, and the flavor still carries through even after all the aging. So, you know, if you were to contrast in styles of what I like versus what like someone like Kenny likes, who likes more of an oak note, I would take a 4-year-old four grain all day long over an over-oaked cask strength, you know, 8-year bourbon. So that would be my favorite grain. I would love to see more people play around with oats. I would actually think it would be cool if we saw a little rise, a little uptick in four-grain bourbons using oat. And then maybe one day I can pair it with my oatmeal and I can have a whole conversation with myself about how much I love oatmeal with oat whiskey. I probably need to go see somebody. I'm being a little weird today. Thank you all for tuning in. If you have an idea for Above the Char, hit me up on fredminnick.com. That's fredminnick.com. Click the contact button, and if I like the idea, I'll read it on the air. Till next week, cheers.
From their bar to yours, Chad and Sarah of the popular YouTube channel It's Bourbon Night bring you their favorite at-home old-fashioned mix with the new Elemental Elixirs Golden Hour Syrup. It's a custom-made syrup with notes of bold black tea, warm spices, and orange zest. All you need is your favorite whiskey and ice. No bitters needed. One bottle makes 16 drinks, so that's only $1 cocktail before you add your own whiskey. They can also be enjoyed in other cocktails or spirits, mocktails, coffee, tea, and anything you can think of. It's crafted locally in Lexington, Kentucky, and you can get your bottle now at whiskeyambitions.com. It's that time of the year where everybody's starting to make their vacation plans on visiting Kentucky, the mecca of bourbon. And if you are coming to Kentucky, you need to make sure you visit us at Pursuit Spirits in Louisville. We're right in the heart of Clifton near Butchertown and Nulu and only just a few miles away from downtown Louisville. But when you do come, you need to book your experience to go do our whole shebang. This is the one that's really the star of the show. You get a full-on tasting. You get to do your own personal barrel selection experience. And you get to grab a whiskey thief and fill your bottle directly from the barrel. We're doing something completely brand new that nobody else is doing here in bourbon country. Plus, you get a free sweet tasting glass at the end of it. I guarantee you, you're going to end up being one of the many people that's also leaving us a 5-star review. So make sure you come and check us out. You can book your reservation by going to pursuitspirits.com and clicking the Visit Us button.
It's that time again to get bourbon strong with Give270. Purchase your $50 tickets for your chance to win from our 50 bourbon prizes. Don't miss out on rare bottles and grand prizes like the legendary Pappy Set, a Weller Rainbow, and the Blood Oath Trilogy. Hurry, only 3,000 tickets are available. Single bottle winners go back in for the grand prize draw. Will you win the ultimate Pappy Set or one of our other incredible prizes? Get your tickets now at Give270.org. Charitable gaming license ORG 0002703.
Welcome back, everybody. Another episode of Bourbon Pursuit coming at you. And this time, the whole gang's here, and we are going to be covering, I don't know, maybe A-list celebrities, B-list celebrities, but really, it's going to be celebrities in bourbon. And the topic of the conversation is going to be, is it going to ultimately hurt bourbon, or is it going to help grow bourbon?
Wait a minute. Now, are we talking about celebrities like Fred and bourbon?
No.
Or are we talking about,
Or
are we talking about, you know, like Drake being in bourbon?
Oh, I was about to say, where do you categorize yourself? Are you C level? You B level?
I would be like below an F. Yeah, so like not graded.
We're not even in the...
We're Z level.
Yeah, there you go.
So, you know what's interesting about this? The guy that really kind of started the mold for a celebrity owning or being a part of spirits was Sammy Hagar. Sammy Hagar made $100 million when he sold, he's got like 5 or 6 brands now, but he sold a brand and then started more brands. And he's built like this really incredible like business model that started, you know, people started seeing that. George Clooney gets in it, sells
Casamigos
for $1 billion to Diageo, who has turned that brand into one of the most successful spirits of all time. And it's now like a top 3 selling tequila, 2 billion cases a year. So their investment of $1 billion in association with George Clooney, doing just fine for them. But then for every one of those, you have like something that just
tanked,
plunders, you know, it doesn't do well. It's just now... So this phenomenon has been going on with spirits, very much so with tequila, for a long time.
Yeah, vodka used to have a ton of them.
Yeah, vodka used to be real big.
Yeah, like P. Diddy's vodka and Trump vodka and I'm sure I'm missing a bunch of them.
And those would just be usually just kind of like straight up licensing deals that they would do with the celebrity. And the whole idea, right, is to get the celebrity to be affiliated. You tap into their network and their notoriety, and you put a poster of them up in BevMo, and then people come and buy it because Kylie Jenner owns this 818 tequila, you know, something like that. And for the, you know, it's often very effective, but research has shown that it's not quite as effective as people think. And they're just now getting into bourbon. And when I say just now getting into it, they're just now getting into owning brands. And like Metallica. Metallica came out with Blackened. You've seen Ian Somerhalder and Paul Wesley come out with Brothers Bond, which those two have really impressed me with like how active they are, and they're actually blending and everything. So
Terry Bradshaw. Charles Woodson. Drake had one for a little bit.
Drake's was awful. It was a Canadian whiskey.
Kings of Leon coming out soon.
Kings of Leon has a collab with Willett.
Gore.
What's Gore?
E-40. Gore. That's the guys that play dress up and heavy metal.
Wow.
They spit blood and other
items. It's not play dress. It's like, it's pretty intense. Heavy metal.
It's real stuff, man. It's like real metal.
You got Brad Paisley, you know.
Yeah. Brad Paisley.
Yeah.
And many more in the works.
Tim McGraw. Alan Jackson.
Yeah. Silver Belly. So they're all coming out. You know, they all have this, and there are more to come. It's a blossoming category. Peyton Manning, of course, and so like you have these deals that are set up, and the distilleries are, you know, 10 years ago they're like, man, we'd love to have a celebrity. Now they're like, yeah, we're good. We're good.
Do you really think they feel that way, that they're shying away from having big celebrity spokespeople? And really now we're just keep dropping names. Bob Dylan. Is it not the distilleries in doing it? And maybe it's just these other like third party companies that are trying to form stuff, that they're looking at what's on the open market. What can we get?
That's a lot of it. But also it's how the deal is cut. Like if it's like a licensing agreement, like some of the deals that I'm privy to, like Blackened, that's all Metallica's money. So that's them actually coming in as like a company and like running that. Some other ones, not as big, are collaborations, and they're 50-50 splits on profit. So they're not, you know, just an extra like revenue
stream.
Is that what McConaughey
does with Long Branch? Or
no, that's they straight up pay him a significant amount of money. I think $1 million, $2 million, something like that, just to like
be the creative director and some other things.
Going yeah.
So I have a feeling as we keep going through here, we're just gonna keep name dropping other things.
I know. It's like, oh, there's that one. Yeah. And also the ones who don't have a bourbon or a spirit, they want to get one, you know, so they often ask me, and I sometimes will make a connection for them. Like I connected ZZ Top's people with Balcones, and, you know, they have a whiskey now. So that stuff is out there, but those deals are not always advantageous for the distilleries. And so now, like, you know, I remember having this conversation with Peerless and Will in Australia, like, yeah, we're not giving up our barrels. We're not going to do that. So it was just that simple. Like, you know, unless it's someone like Garth Brooks coming in, I'm sure, you know, those types of distillers are not going to give anything up. And then you have like, take a look at Jim Beam. You know, they collaborated with Mila Kunis, right?
They had Kid Rock for the longest time as one of their big people. And
Hank Williams Jr.
But they never had their own brand. Or
yeah, they were always right.
So there is this difference between bringing in a celebrity spokesperson and bringing one in to like collaborate with and letting them have their own whiskey. And the Rapid Age people preyed upon, and I really do mean that, they preyed upon the managers and so forth who wanted to get brands. And so like they would get like Terracincha stuff dumped in a bottle and they'd start selling it. And it didn't work.
That was the Charles Woodson brand, correct?
Charles is like that. I think he's moved over to legit Green River stuff now. There's several of the brands out there that are Rapid Age.
Yeah. So I guess when I start looking at this, yes, there's a lot of celebrities that are getting into bourbon. There's not going to stop being celebrities that are getting into bourbon. It's going to continually flourish. I think that we have to ask ourselves I know that we're probably one of the, you know, in the one percenters, the two percenters of bourbon, like we know what's going on. We know how to read between the lines. And we have to start thinking, okay, is this a good thing for bourbon? Is this going to grow the category? Or is this a money grab for the people that are just in it? Versus, is this something that could ultimately hurt bourbon over time? Because let's take the Terra Sencha part as an example. And when I say it's going to hurt bourbon, as somebody that is brand new to whiskey, brand new to bourbon, and they're like, oh my gosh, one of my favorite football players ever has got a bourbon. I got to get this. I'm going to open up. I'm going to drink it. And all of a sudden they drink it. What is this? I'm never drinking bourbon ever again.
Yeah.
Like you're going to lose people.
That's exactly right. And you know, to Charles's credit, like he would finish his stuff in his wine barrels, you know, so he would, you know, try to at least add a little bit more flavor to it than what was in there from the rapid aging process. But that was Max Shapira's concern about craft whiskey 15 years ago. You know, I remember when I was kind of green and new in the covering whiskey, he set me in his office and he was like, what do you think about this craft whiskey scene? You know, I think it can be bad because people will think that, you know, rot gut 2-year-old is bourbon. It's not good bourbon, you know, so I think that
it's a fair point, though.
That's, you know, always a concern.
Yeah, because you got this small town distillery you're going to support, and you're like, mm-hmm. Oh, I'm going to try their bourbon. And then you try, and you're like, oh, God.
back to the 6-year-old
Heaven Hill. Back to the vodka I was drinking.
But there's also ways of discovery. And a good example is Slipknot's collaboration with Cedar Ridge to do their No. 9. No one had ever heard of Cedar Ridge outside of Iowa. I mean, I had, and I'd given them some very bad reviews. I'm not a fan of 80 proof whiskey. I don't think many people are in our world. And they had an 80 proof bottling, and I ripped it to shreds. And Slipknot came out with their No. 9 reserve, and it was 99 proof. And it was delicious. I loved it. Absolutely loved it. And for most of the whiskey drinkers out there, Slipknot's whiskey was their introduction to Cedar Ridge, who is now in the barrel picking scene, is now on Seal Box and is in the circles of the bourbon world.
If I remember correctly, there was also a news article that came out that they're the top selling brand in Iowa.
That's right. Yeah.
Over Templeton? In Templeton and Iowa?
Yeah, over Maker's Mark.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Like they were always doing well in Iowa, but the Slipknot, which is they're from Iowa. Iowans are very supportive of Iowans. I think that's probably more so than any state I've ever seen. Like in Kentucky, like, oh, you're from Kentucky. That's nice. We're going to go over here to Indiana. You know, it's a little different. But Iowans, man, if you're from Iowa, they will support you. The Hawkeyes and the Cyclones are very incredible people. But that was a moment where I thought that the collaboration of the celebrity was great for the distillery.
I think a collaboration is good. The collaboration is good because the distillery still has a name to it.
Right.
And it's not just the face of the person. I mean, I'll go ahead and I'm not going to try to drag anybody through the mud, but I want to be honest about the way that I thought about their whiskey. I mean, we'll take Terry Bradshaw, for example. We know that Green River produces some amazing whiskey. However, when I tried his, I thought it was still too young. It was not ready. It was.
Which batch did you have?
Yeah, probably the first one.
Yeah.
I can't remember. But it was 3-year, maybe 2-year, yeah, something
that was,
like that.
Yeah, that was the first one.
And I know the proof was had to do something with his mm-hmm. his jersey number. I don't know.
I think it was his passer rating.
There you go.
I don't
yards
know.
Yeah. And it ran 12, whatever it is.
12 proof would be pretty low.
Yeah.
When is number 12?
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. But that's the way I look at it is that when people are getting into this from the celebrity side of things, it's hard to sit there and say, okay, are they in it for the right reasons? Or are they going to do it because they need another revenue stream? And for the most part, when I look at a lot of these celebrity brands, it's the revenue stream. I want to take Metallica as probably a really good example because not only do they do it from a revenue stream perspective, I think they wanted to do something that they could create their own. And that's why they have mm-hmm. that whole like sonic enhancement and they have this whole blackened thing. So it's cool. Like they have their own little thing.
They also have like, oh, go ahead.
Well, the thing I was going to say is the big reason that they wanted to do this is because now they want to take it to every single concert venue they go to and they want to double up on it. And so they can go and they can sell their own whiskey at every single concert. And, you know, they don't have to worry about, you know, okay, Jim Beam's not getting this money. We're getting this money. And they can capitalize on that. Same thing with Brad Paisley. The same exact thing's going to happen there. Yeah.
I will say, like, I'm very familiar with that because, you know, and putting on concerts and being the spirits guy in those scenes. And also being friends with all these managers and everything that manage these bands and kind of helping them from time to time. That is their goal. But there's also like venues don't always play ball with that. They have conflict of interest statements in their contracts. And like Las Vegas at MGM, when I did an event there, I had to sign a thing that I had no partnerships with any of the bourbons I was pouring or in any kind of like affiliation or whatsoever. So like I do think that the venues are seeing that trend. And they're saying, oh, we don't make as much money on this one. Yeah. So it's a negotiation point now. Festivals, man, that's open, you know. But the places that are like the Yum Center, Madison Square Garden, you know, they got to get their vig on what's being poured there. And that like marketing money, the $100,000, $200,000, $1 million sponsorship, you know, to be poured there. That's a major revenue stream for the venues. So you're very smart to catch on to that point. But it's so interesting to see like the behind the scenes back and forth of like how it's playing out, because the venues don't like that angle.
Oh, I'm sure they hate it. Everybody knows the margin you can make in drinks.
Yeah, I was thinking about this as you were talking, and it's like having a celebrity, you know, probably pre-social media days was probably a no-fail home run. You know, you get a celebrity behind it, you know, get it people, because they're the people that were getting covered all the time. You know, they're right on TV, they're in magazines, they're this and that, whereas people no longer necessarily tune into those. You know, I mean, there's some that'll tune into E! And read People magazine or whatever all the time, but no, most people...
I saw another one, UFC and Hallerhead with Dan and White. There we go.
Another Green River brand, now Pritzker. But it's like, now is it almost a disadvantage to have a celebrity? Like, are you going to be like, people going to be more skeptical, and that, whereas people now are really tuned into like social media people and you know, their tribe that they've built online, would they more trust them versus like a celebrity? I don't know. Does it put you at more of a disadvantage?
Well, I think it depends on the celebrity. I mean, if the celebrity is not involved with the brand and not sharing that in their social media content, I think it's a fail.
The Rock does it the best, by the way, because his Terramana Tuesdays. Yeah. I mean, say what you will about the tequila, but he definitely does his job of pumping up.
So the guy, so the architect behind that, his partner, is a guy named Ken Austin, who founded Avion Tequila. He was also Conor McGregor's guy that built Proper 12. He was one of my first business interviews in the game when I was at tasting panel. We've remained friends over the years, and he says The Rock put his own money into that, and like he's very passionate about it. Like, and so you have someone who's like more than just, you know, he's engaged with this. And yes, it's a revenue stream, but more importantly, at some point, Brown-Forman, Diageo, Pernod Ricard is going to buy these brands from that. So it's not just a revenue stream, but these big plays like that, it's the how you get the FU money for these guys. You know, it's how they upgrade on the private jet. And The Rock is just, I mean, to me, he's the best celebrity out there. Like, he's like, if we were to have to do a poll, like who's the number one celebrity, just who you like seeing, The Rock is my guy.
Everybody loves him.
His amount of bandwidth he has is unbelievable.
I know.
It's like,
you think he's cloned? You think he's got another guy?
There's
got
to be. I mean, I feel like we're pretty, you know, busy and ambitious. I'm like, how the hell does he shoot six movies?
And TV still manages episode, to be that big and buff and work
go
out,
bass, you know? Fishing, and you know, I'm like, gosh, how do you have all this time?
I don't know how he figures it out. But I want to touch on what you talked about Diageo and these big brands that are buying them out. I kind of hate that the fact that this is happening, only because if you look at Casamigos, yes, it's the third biggest selling tequila brand, yet what, it's full of sugars and flavors and additives, and a lot of diehard tequila fans just aren't a fan of it. If this happens in the bourbon world, let's say Brothers Bond gets picked up. Okay, now you've got somebody that's going to go start slanging a bunch more 80 proof whiskey from MGP around.
Well, like, they do have cash strength and stuff.
They have cash strength, which I was much more fan of that than their 80 proof. I wasn't a fan of that. Just tasted, you know, whatever.
Is there ever going to be an 80 proof that we like, though?
No, but I mean, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, granddad. I mean, I guess they're 86, though. Probably.
But that's what I'm talking about, is that if you get to that point where those brands get acquired and get blown up, and then all of a sudden that becomes the standard for what is bourbon to the average consumer than people like Barrel, people like, I don't even want to say Wild Turkey, but you know, other NDPs, other people that are really trying to put out great whiskey are going to kind of get overshadowed because they're going to be lost by 80 proof MGP.
What's an amazing, the topic you bring up here is kind of like, you can almost see like how the celebrity strategy plays out with like what they're bottling. You know, Brothers Bond, they're not going after us or, you know, the typical bourbon drinker. They're bringing in a new audience.
They're bringing in their audience.
They're bringing in their audience and they just got just enough on the fray where I think there are 100,000 cases already. I mean, they're pretty big. You know, a lot of it is like how they are bottled, how are they are marketed. And they're not after like that core that Barrel has created, or to an extent, someone like, you know, a brand like Booker's has like been marketing to. They're tapping into a new audience that will compete against Jack Daniels and Crown and
all those.
Yeah, those like floor pours is what I would call them. Like you're out on the floor playing in a casino and you get like, yeah, you know, cigarettes, whiskey, you know, that from the cocktail.
Yeah, what does Brothers Bond retail for? Like 380 proof.
It's pretty inexpensive. I think it's like $35, maybe $40, something
like
that.
It's sad that you say that's inexpensive, but it is. Good God, $35 for 80 proof.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, it's depressing.
I think that's probably, so maybe it's too expensive then. I don't know, whatever you want to put it at.
Hey, but you know what? I mean, Basil Hayden is
40, 50, 60. I don't even know what it is.
$60
anymore.
For 80 proof.
I haven't bought a bottle of Basil Hayden in a while. But like I said, the one thing that I feel that might be something that could hurt bourbon over time, because if it does get acquired by the likes of Diageo or a Constellation or a very large brand that can put all the money they have behind the resources of really blowing it up, then that becomes the new standard for what people get introduced to. And that becomes something that people are...
They go that more this, for this, smooth and easy and light instead of, you know, full flavored, full...
I mean,
you know, I don't know.
And it's not, we've said it all the time. It's, you know, it's not like that we have a war against MGP. We always say it's great, but then that becomes the standard, right? Now, Kentucky bourbon now loses its luster to some Indiana whiskey.
Vampire Indiana boys.
But that is a real concern for the Kentucky bourbon distillers, is they do know there's a lot of quality out there knocking on that door. And it's not MGP. But like Starlight, you know, Starlight Huber's distillery is making great whiskey. And I think to myself, if they got positioned and up their capacity and like a celebrity helped introduce people to that brand, much like we saw like with Cedar Ridge, I think that would be good for bourbon. Whereas like, you know, you're talking about like some of the celebrity action is on the lower tier, lower quality, and isn't necessarily good for bourbon.
Well, I guess give me an example of a celebrity that's put out something that's like super high quality, premium price point that pretty much anybody can get behind, whether you're a whiskey fan or you're an everyday consumer. If you're anything like me, then you can't get enough about bourbon. And that's why I'm a subscriber to Bourbon Plus magazine. Bourbon Plus is a quarterly publication that tells the stories from the heart of bourbon. The farmers who grow the grain, the distillers who labor over the process, and the people, like you and me, who raise their glasses to celebrate it all. Subscribe to Bourbon Plus magazine today at bourbonplus.com, that's PLUS.com, and use code PURSUIT at checkout for $5 off your subscription. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point-of-sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. And with Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. And you can get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/bourbon, all lowercase, and go to shopify.com/bourbon to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/bourbon. Give me an example of a celebrity that's put out something that's like super high quality, premium price point that pretty much anybody can get behind, whether you're a whiskey fan or you're an everyday consumer.
Oh, we're staying in whiskey? Not.
Yeah, let's stay in whiskey. Okay. I mean, we are a bourbon podcast after all.
Yeah, well, that's true. I was about to go into tequila because there's so many damn celebrities there. But
I know, I'm trying to run that.
Okay, there you go. You answered my question, right?
I would say...
Name anything that any celebrities came out with in whiskey that has been something that all of us could get behind and go, yeah, that's a pretty damn good whiskey.
I would say probably the Slipknot one, but I know that not everyone liked that one, but Blackened...
I'd say Blackened is probably the closest.
Blackened, yeah. Their cash drink is up there. And, you know, I know you didn't like the first batch. I thought that the Bradshaw batches 2, 3, and 4 were really good. And
they haven't sent us one after number one. So I guess that was my only introduction.
They never sent
to
me
it.
Any either. I went.
Yeah, but Blackened, they have, gosh, I can't remember their master blender or whatever, curator. Rob yes. That's going out and, you know, doing this, you know, he's the one going out with Drew and the warehouses and picking those barrels and blending them, or the first couple ones were MGP, I guess, or
I don't know.
No, they basically were aged, they were at Whistle Pig, and he basically blended. Dave used to like create this in the vein of Canadian whiskey with a finish with the, you know, Metallica music playing. It's essentially it. I mean, I miss Dave, but that was kind of their vision. And the way that he did that is like, you cannot duplicate that, you know. And probably created the most difficult process for making a whiskey.
But Blackened too, I mean, it's still a very niche market. It's not as wide, you know, 100,000 cases is for, you know, the brotherhood or whatever,
brotherhood.
Like Blackened's probably more of like a 10,000 bottle, you know, release.
Yeah, I don't think it's 100,000 cases, but I know growing.
No,
yeah.
But that is, it speaks to a different audience as well. You go and you talk to the everyday normal bourbon consumer, they might not know that Blackened is actually part of Metallica. Heck, Metallica is a pretty big name. Who knows if even all of their fans know that Blackened is something that Metallica
owns.
They
sure try if you get on their socials. And then you read the comments and it's like, you guys are old. I'm like, wow, you all are mean, you know? It's
like, I haven't looked at their socials. But
you know, I also something to point out is like, you know, does it fit? And Metallica has had very public commentary or very, very public issues with alcohol. James Hetfield, the lead singer, is sober. And I remember when I was interviewing them, you know, that kind of came up a little bit.
Does it seem like it's a money grab if somebody goes, I'm sober, but I'm going to come out my own whiskey?
But one of the band members.
Yeah, but there's other.
Is huge.
Other.
Yeah. They're huge, huge whiskey fans. Like Robert's a huge whiskey fan. And by
the way, I'm not trying to deny. I'm actually just posing a question. So that's all.
Poke hole.
I'm just.
It's Metallica is a $1 billion company. You know, if you look at it like as a company, it's a $1 billion company. And, you know, Lars would be the CEO. I remember sitting down with him, and that guy was just asking me questions about whiskey. He was like probing my brain for more information. It was really fascinating, and to be there with Dave during that process was really cool. But Metallica is a brand that would be like if you want to translate music bands into brands, it's Nike, Starbucks. You know, they are a mega brand. Their font has literally been copied and used by people. Like, so they've created something that, you know, without James Hetfield, there is no Metallica. Don't get me wrong, but he would not have signed off on that if he didn't want to. And they have maintained his sobriety and everything. And that comes up a lot, and they've approached it. And I think they've handled it well, but at the same time, the outside looking in, it's kind of like, is it a money grab? I mean, it's business. So, yeah.
Fair.
What about Sweetens Cove, you know?
That's a good example. I think the The only issue that I see with Sweetens Cove is that there's too many pockets to line with that one. You know, you've got both the Mannings, the Andy Roddick,
Drew Holcomb.
I mean, you keep going. The list keeps
actually
going
all three down. Mannings, Cooper Manning's in it too.
So you keep going down this list, and all of a sudden, you would think, like, just with all those people, you would think that would be bigger than Brothers Bond, it'd be bigger than all these people, because you combine all of their social media accounts together, it's bigger. Yeah, it's bigger than them.
I don't know about Brothers Bond. They got a big social media following.
Yeah. Well, maybe big, but it's just they comment and it's just a bunch of like heart emojis. So I don't really know what's real and what's not.
Text me, come to me, come.
So it's hard to know exactly what's real and what's not.
But it seems like they are going after that whiskey enthusiast market. They're not just like trying to be like a. I mean, maybe their goal is to scale as big as Brothers Bond, but it doesn't seem like that. It seems like they're very small batch quality focused, you know, having Marianne blend for them. And
it almost doesn't feel like it's about them.
Right. Exactly. I think it's probably more of
an investment.
I don't know. And Fred's, you know, spent time with these boys and probably knows their intentions with it, but
it's the story behind the golf course there a little bit. They wanted to get in business together. And, you know, I mean, everyone who gets in the whiskey business, right, has a story, and there's a lot of it's around friends and everything. And I think that one is genuine with Sweetens Cove. And one of my favorite stories about that is like Peyton Manning calling up stores and talking to managers randomly to get them to carry the brand.
Oh, gosh, that's an easy sell.
I was like, you know, because he doesn't have social media. That was one of the things I talked to him. I was like, why don't you have social media? He's like, well, I was in the age before that was there, so I'm just not going to add it.
Just going to leave it. That's smart.
But you're all right, Ryan. It doesn't feel like that brand is about them. They're investors into it. They're a little vocal about it, but you don't see any of them that are constantly taking pictures of it. And it's not, you know, we're going to make a Kennedy tour or anything like that. They're relying a lot on Marianne to make it successful.
Right.
And sure. I feel that might be an unfair advantage that she has to deal with, because, you know, she's dealt the hand she's given with the whiskey barrels that's there. And it's, for the most part, it's really good whiskey. But, you know, for the promotion side of things, to make sure that it's constantly selling through, knowing that's probably the hardest thing. It's easy to make your first case sales to actually go and get onto the store shelves, but it's hard to get that sell through to make sure that consumers are going and buying it. And then the distributors are reordering and all that. And I think that's the hard part. And is if you don't have that, if that particular brand doesn't have that face that's going to be continually promoting and pushing it, that's going to be really hard to sustain over a period of time.
Yeah. And also Sweetens Cove was an example to me of how a celebrity can be damaging to a brand in our circle. Like, I saw more memes about Sweetens Cove getting made in the whiskey groups and, you know, any of the celebrity brands out there. Like, you don't see people like giving Brothers Bond a hard time.
Do you think it's because Marianne's connection with it? Is that why?
No, I think that was kind of her first thing out of the gate. And people would say, oh, great, another 13-year Dickel. And that was unfair, right? That was unfair for her. But what she did with Kennedy, that was, you know, you can see blending talent right there. But I think she has incredible brand association now, moving on for coming out of that being her first project to get other projects lined up. I mean, that's great brand association for her. So she's fine. But people know so much about the whiskey. Like, you can't pull wool over a whiskey consumer's eyes anymore. You can't. But if that product came out when he was with the Colts in 2005, they'd probably be in hog heaven with revenue. But they can't do that now, because everybody knows every single thing in this space. And so I think that to be a celebrity, you know, you're going to have to rely on a Marianne, a Nancy Fraley, Larry Ebersold, someone like that to guide you, so you don't get, I don't want to say called out, because they get called out all the time, but your whiskey sources and all that snuffed out, because everyone can do the math pretty quickly. And Brothers Bond, $35, that's acceptable, right? Pricing is everything in this game. And to come out of the gate, $200, $300, that's tough.
Yeah. You're right. By the way, Breckenridge, Denver Broncos. So there's another one.
Yeah.
The other kind of comment to kind of take along from what you were talking about with the pricing aspect. Yes, you're going to have a variable range, but you know, with the Sweetens Cove thing, as we mentioned before, there's a lot of people that are going to be invested in that. So there's going to be some, they want to make their returns at some point. And I don't think anybody in that realm is going to be the next Casamigos by any means, but we could be wrong. I'm not too sure about there.
Well, Proper 12 would be a really good comparison. That sold for $600 million to Proximo, Conor McGregor's.
But he got pushed out though, right?
He's still loosely affiliated. I mean, he constantly is punching somebody in public.
That's
so
true.
I don't know what his state is at the moment, but he still had like an ambassadorship or some kind of role.
Yeah, you're right. Probably didn't get pushed out completely.
But that's a pretty nice check on that whiskey. And he was hustling that whiskey hard, you know. He was talking about case sales and everything. Oh, you know, a brand that has a lot of celebrity involvement is actually Uncle Nearest. They have a lot of celebrity investors like Jeffrey Wright, Andre Iguodala in the NBA. People like that are investors.
Okay. And see, those are things that you probably don't hear about on the, at least for the most part.
Do you know how many cases Uncle Nearest does?
Uncle Nearest. They did the research and made the claim that they were the fastest growing American whiskey of all time. I'm not saying they were
awarded.
Well, that they did. I think that's a sidebar for another thing, another time, but you can track sales. And, you know, I think they are right. I think they are the fastest growing American whiskey. But like, I mean, you have to get the research for me to verify that. I mean, it's like research is expensive. And if you dip back to like, if you want to go back to like the 50s and stuff, that's a lot of work. So I'm not going to go and spend all that time to validate and verify that they are truly the fastest growing of all time. But I would say that it's very likely that they are the fastest growing of all time.
I still wouldn't consider Uncle Nearest a celebrity brand. They might have, a lot of people have celebrity backers into a lot of things that they're doing. But, you know, to be the face of the brand is to be one thing. And to kind of bring this all kind of full circle again is I want to try to find some silver lining. I know I try to poke holes and everything.
Or a silver belly like Alan Jackson's.
Or that too. But I know I look at it from a purist and the people that listen to this particular podcast, they're the ones that are going to know, like, I'm not going to go buy celebrity whiskey. I'm just not going to do it. And for the most part, I don't think you're ever going to be missing out by not buying a celebrity whiskey. Most people that are listening to this, they know exactly what they like. They know what to go after. They know their distilleries. They know how to read the back of a label. But I want to, you know, kind of give a little bit of credit to say, all right, what are the good things that can come out of having a celebrity whiskey? And I think the only thing that we can say is that, well, you do find new fringe audiences. You do pull people into the category. The only thing, again, is I just get worried that they might get a bad first taste at the product.
Well, let's look at it, too, from like what's in it for the consumer. I'm looking at a standard everyday bottle of Woodford Reserve up there, but there's something different. It's got some horsies painted on it. It's a special Kentucky Derby bottle. But if you were to crack that open, it's just regular old Woodford Reserve. Ain't nothing special about it. And I think that's the part of it. Like, I was a Metallica fan. I was a Slipknot fan. And so for me to get the opportunity to, you know, check out their whiskeys and talk to them, that was really cool for me. So if you are a fan of the celebrity, you know, they're human, they're in business, you know, and it's a way of showing a support to them in a weird way. Hang on the bottle, drink it, don't drink
in
it
in a weird way.
But yeah, that's, I mean, there's Kentucky Derby fans who just buy that bottle. Their Maker's Mark has a celebrity endorsed bottle every year that they give away or sell at Keeneland. And you know, people just buy it for that bottle. And it's just Maker's Mark. It's just Woodford Reserve. So it's not foreign, and there's not going to be enough of that whiskey out there to convert the palates of the world. And the only brand that really, in my opinion, has a chance is Brothers Bond. And they're going to have to take up a lot more still time at MGP. And for all I know, Luxco MGP could have a minority share of them. So to have that first right to buy, which is how a lot of these things are set up. So that's the only brand that I can see having the Casamigos look and effect. But
it's the only one that would make sense for MGP only because they've had trouble establishing brand dominance pretty much everywhere. I mean, you look at a lot of the brands that they've come out, as well as, I mean, Luxco has a few, but most of anything that came out from MGP was, I don't want to say fail, but they definitely haven't been able to penetrate a big portion of the market with Remus and other things.
I'm never a fan of like naming a whiskey after a criminal, but you know, I think that never helps you.
Jack the Ripper.
Yeah. The celebrity aspect of me is I'm indifferent about it. I think it's good that it can get new consumers. I'm not too worried, you know, if somebody drinks the Vampire Brothers bourbon and think that that's what bourbon is. You
what
know?
If it's actually like to prime you up to be eaten by a vampire? Well, by the way, is it okay if I ask him why he's wearing glasses on his hat like this whole time?
I didn't realize they were up there.
Just for those listening, Ryan has a pair of very nice glasses, by the way, on top of his hat.
And headphones on top of that.
It's like
I like a lot of accessories.
He's got a new thing going.
It does. Looks slick. It looks slick.
Yeah, I mean, it is good, I think, to bring awareness. And to another positive thing, like Brad Paisley's brand, I'm pretty sure he donates all the profits to like Nashville charities and this and that. So, you know, there's some things that they can do with their brands that others just can't, you know. And
it's the same that the Always Sunny in Philadelphia guys are doing. They're donating all that to like Bartender Relief.
Yeah. And so I don't know. Celebrity brands don't excite me, you know, as a consumer. I'm sure they're, you know, diehard fan bases that will try anything. And if it gets them into the category, you know, why not?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm totally with you. I think we just have to keep doing what we usually do, and that's continuing education and making sure that people are aware that. If you are getting this category and you know, maybe it was Bradshaw, maybe it was Brothers Bond, maybe it was Blacken that got you into trying whiskey, but hopefully what we can do and what all the other people in whiskey YouTube land and Instagrammers, they can introduce you to all the other amazing whiskeys that are out there that maybe are coming from people that have experienced blending and palate expertise, the ones that are coming from great heritage distilleries that'll really capture you and get you into this. And maybe that's how you fall into it. But I feel like it's our responsibility to sit there and continue the education and get people to try more things and break out of just like what's there.
And to challenge these celebrities not to just put something in the bottle, you know, if you're going to do it right, you know?
Yeah. That's why, like, so going back to Brothers Bond, like they're involved, you know, Slipknot, you know, Clown of Slipknot is involved, you know, there. So when you see like the involvement of the people, that's where I've seen the most success.
And I think the greatest thing we can say about bourbon is that they are forced to not do any additives, coloring, flavoring, sugar adding, or anything like that. So they still have to put out a
blend of straights or a finish or a non-straight rye whiskey. So
something like that.
You know, get on that education.
Well, we can tackle the TTB laws a different day. But
oh boy, that's a whole 15 shows.
Oh boy.
Good. All right. We'll go back to the
Cecil's
spreadsheet.
Out on that one.
Figure out which one we got to do there. But let's go ahead and wrap it up. That is going to be another episode of kind of talking about celebrities and bourbon and whether it was, and kind of love to hear your thoughts on it, whether you've had a good experience or a bad experience, or whether maybe this is how you got into whiskey in general. But you can go ahead and leave a comment on any of the socials that you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and or TikTok. And then also, if you like the show, share it with a friend, maybe get them into whiskey and they say like, oh, hey, I tried this other stuff. And be like, oh, let me introduce you to this podcast. They'll tell you all about all kinds of great whiskeys. But with that, cheers, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Vodka sucks.
Toodles.